everyone. Before we start, I wanted to let you know, if you would like to watch our whole service, head to our website. That's dc2.me. And from the media drop-down, click sermons. You can watch our whole service there. And now, here's this week's sermon.
Good morning. Oh my gosh, that's a first service crowd. Good morning. Welcome to Discovery Church. My name is Jacob, and I'm one of the pastors here. Today, our sermon is rooted in Acts 16, 1 through 5, and I'd love to start our service by reading it. If you have a Bible, you can follow along, or if not, it'll be up on the screen. Acts 16, 1 through 5. Paul came to Derbe and then to Lystra, where a disciple named Timothy lived, whose mother was Jewish and a believer, but whose father was a Greek. The believers at Lystra and Iconium spoke well of him. Paul wanted to take him along on the journey, so he circumcised him because of the Jews who lived in that area, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. As they traveled from town to town, they delivered the decisions reached by the apostles and elders in Jerusalem for the people to obey. So the churches were strengthened in the faith and grew daily in numbers. Oh, Timothy, the disciple whose mom dragged him to church, and he ended up traveling most of the known world, learning about and teaching people about God. We're going to hear a lot more about him today. But first, I want to talk, at the beginning of the summer, my family decided we wanted to be hikers. Colorado is beautiful. We tend to be bad Coloradans who don't get out enough, and we wanted to start hiking more. We decided for our first hike that we would tackle one up in Boulder at Chautauqua called the Royal Arch. It's a doable hike, but a little difficult at points. My wife and I had this slight fear that our kids wouldn't be able to handle it. There are some big, steep, uphill parts, and we were worried that our kids would peter out halfway through, and we'd have to figure out how to either drag them to the top or bottom of the mountain. Spoiler, that didn't happen at all. Our kids probably managed to hike the entire mountain, the equivalent of three different times, while they ran up and down the trail waiting for mom and dad, who were gasping for oxygen and taking copious amounts of breaks. And let me tell you, hiking this trail was an interesting experience. Like I said, it's a little bit more on the difficult side, and there were people from all walks of life hiking the trail. First were what I would call the experts. I met my first set of experts near the top. It was a group of six college guys. They were running the trail with no shirts on. They were running at a pace that would have been acceptable on flat terrain, let alone on a steep mountain trail, and I don't think any of them even broke a sweat. They passed us getting to the top, and just a few minutes later, I saw them running back down. So as they passed us, I asked one of the guys, "Was the view not good up there? You didn't stay very long." His response was, "Oh, we live a few minutes from the trail. We run this every day." Fair enough. While I'm gasping for air and trying not to pass out, they run it just for the fun of it. Good for them. The next expert was one that most of us who have gone hiking have probably seen similar of. This is a gentleman on the other end of the age spectrum. He was probably in his 60s, pushing into his 70s, and he too was jogging the trail with a German shepherd running alongside him. They passed us, and they too came jogging back just a little while later. Aside from the embarrassment of being passed by a person at least 20 years my senior, I didn't think much of it until he came back up again, still at a jog. See, this man wasn't running the trail once. He was running it 2 to 3 times. This hike was 3.2 miles round trip, and this gentleman was getting between 6 and 9 miles in at a jog on a steep trail. On his last time down the mountain, he was carrying his German shepherd in both arms because his dog couldn't keep up. His dog looked like it was having the time of its life. I still have trouble believing what I saw. Aside from those two groups, however, I'd say that most of the rest of the hikers were pretty normal. Some were in great shape, some weren't. Some were fast, some were slow. There were kids, men, women, animals, and people of all ages. And one thing I noticed was almost everyone who was coming down from the summit was really happy to chat with anyone coming up. We talked to multiple people on the way up who told us how much further it was, which parts were going to be difficult, and where good places to pause and take pictures were. I remember distinctly people saying, "Hey, when you can smell wildflowers, you're almost there." Nearly every person we met who was on their way down was happy to coach us on what the rest of the trail looked like going up. Eventually, we made it to the top. I averted having a heart attack, and all was well. And then we began our trek down. And you know what's crazy? We became some of the same people we met on the way up. I remember passing a family of six, a mom, a dad, and four little kids, probably ranging in age from 4 to 10. The dad stopped me and asked me about the trail. Which parts are hard? How much further do we have? Can my kids make it? Where are some good places to take pictures? Do you have any advice? Now, this guy was in better shape than me. He had great hiking supplies, but still he was looking for answers. I had a version of this talk 3 or 4 times. Families, a few more college students, and a mixed group of people, all of them wanted a little bit more information from someone who had gone ahead, someone who had made it, someone who had seen the top. Now, to be clear, I am not an expert hiker, something my children would absolutely tell you. While they were climbing, jumping, and running up and down the trail, I was doing my best not to pass out and wishing I had spent more time on the treadmill. Still, to those who hadn't been as high as I was, I had a wealth of knowledge they wanted, and I found myself loving being able to share it. And I'm betting that many of you who have gone hiking have had similar experiences. This brings us to our series, and eventually to a young man named Timothy. We're in week 2 of our series, Hero of 1,000 Faces, where we're talking about discipleship and community and what it means to walk with Jesus and alongside others. A local author by the name of Jesse Cruikshank wrote a book called Ordinary Discipleship, where she took this concept of the hero's journey, which had been codified by a man named Joseph Campbell in his book, Hero of 1,000 Faces, and she applied it to discipleship. Here's an outline of what Jesse put together. One more. There you go. An ordinary person answers the call to adventure. They team with others, usually involving a wise mentor of some sorts. They learn new things. They feel the struggle and the hard. They experience revelation, and their lives are changed. Jesse said, hey, just like Joseph Campbell called this the hero's journey, this is the path of discipleship. This is what it looks like to walk in faith. Last week, Zach tackled the first 2, and this week, we're tackling the second 2. Before we do, though, I want to give callback to something Zach talked about last week. He read a passage called the Great Commission, and we're going to read it again. If you have a Bible, you can look at Matthew 28, 16 through 20. Matthew 28, 16 through 20. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. As we jump into the rest of the day, I want to make sure when it comes to this idea of discipleship that we're all on the same page. This idea that an ordinary person answers the call to adventure really means everyone in this room. It really means everyone online. It means anyone who calls Discovery home. Discipleship is an adventure. It's a realm of unknowns and learnings and finding out more about ourselves and ultimately helping point people up the trail further to where Jesus is. For those who are discipling others or are being discipled, the call to discipleship is an adventure, and it comes with both excitement and a little bit of terror as we jump into the unknown. And Jesus knew that when he called his disciples into bringing that type of relationship to others. I love what Matthew wrote about these disciples. He said Jesus' followers worshiped him, and some doubted. Yet he called all of them to what we call the Great Commission, because it turns out that anyone who calls themselves a follower of Christ, anyone who is an ordinary person, is called to the adventure of what discipleship is. It's the process of walking with others in community and in faith and helping others along in their spiritual journey while you yourself are helped along in the journey. The Great Commission is something that can be seen as a command and an expectation from God that applies to all followers of Jesus. This means that if you're in this room today and you are a follower of Christ, no matter how young you are, no matter how old you are, no matter what your walk of life, Jesus is calling you to go and make disciples of the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and to teaching them to obey what he has commanded you. And this comes with a promise that he'll be with you to the end of the age. So as we go into this next section, just know that this applies to everyone here. We are all ordinary people, and God has called us to adventure of being mentored and discipled, and of mentoring and discipling, and of doing it in community. And one of the best examples of this is a young man named Timothy. Timothy's a really fun character in the New Testament because oftentimes when we see characters in the Bible, we get little snippets of their lives, we get little snapshots, but with Timothy, as you look through the course of the New Testament, you actually get to see the majority of his life play out and see where he ends up. At the beginning of the sermon, I read Acts 16:1-5, where we were introduced to young Timothy. We find out that Timothy is a disciple whose mom is Jewish, but his dad is Greek. This is the author's way of telling us that while his mom is Jewish, his dad is definitely a Gentile, someone who is not of the Jewish faith, and it's debated whether or not he was a believer. We're not sure. Whatever the case, Timothy saw something in this young man and had him circumcised, a way of showing his following and devotion to God, and brought him along on his journey. Paul took an ordinary young man and called him to adventure. Now, the normal way we talk about Timothy in church is to talk about the progression of disciples who all led to Timothy. For those who don't know the story leading up to this, it started with a man named Paul. Paul was an incredibly well-learned Jewish man who followed God fervently, and in that, he persecuted Christians who he believed were perverting the Jewish faith. In fact, Paul was present at the martyring of the first Christian after Jesus' death and resurrection, a man named Stephen. After this, while on his way to persecute Christians, Paul had an encounter with Jesus and converted his life to follow him. Paul was excited and tried to do the work of Jesus, but he found a roadblock. People were terrified of him. He had spent most of his life at this point persecuting and rallying against Christians, and so now on his conversion, people were scared. He was so feared by Christians that he, instead of doing work in the area, instead of meeting with people, he went back home to Tarsus, where he stayed for a number of years. Years later, there was a growing spiritual movement in a place called Antioch, and the disciples in Jerusalem sent a man named Barnabas to see what was happening and begin discipling the new believers and helping in the work God had started. Barnabas arrived, saw how much work there was, and left to go to Tarsus to grab Paul and brought him to Antioch, where they discipled new and non-believers. They stayed there for a whole year, and this is the first place where people were called Christians. Had to have been amazing to see. After this, Paul continued to travel and teach and eventually ended up in a place called Lystra, where he met a young man named Timothy. He called Timothy to follow him, and this young man went with Paul and began to teach and disciple others, eventually becoming a pastor of a church. So the progression goes like this. Barnabas called and discipled Paul, who called and discipled Timothy, who eventually would go on to call and disciple his own church in Ephesus. And if we stop there, if we end the sermon right there, it's a pretty cool story about this chain of discipleship. It's a lesson about how you're called to walk alongside others and disciple them, and the long-term result can be this generational impact of worship as person after person is discipled. Timothy doesn't get discipled if Barnabas doesn't call Paul. It's super cool how that worked out, except I think Timothy's story is even cooler than that and plays really well into this idea of discipleship and this idea of experts. Let's rewind a little and take a look at Timothy's story. You see, in this story, we have an expert. It's a guy named Paul. Paul knew his Bible. Paul knew the answers. Paul is the guy who, if he had questions about faith, questions about religions, questions about what it meant to be Jewish, Paul knew what he was talking about. He could give you the scripture references. Heck, he probably had it memorized. Paul knew his stuff. However, interwoven throughout all the stories with Timothy and Paul, we meet a lot of other people who were not experts, but probably had a huge influence on this young man named Timothy. When Paul first meets Timothy, he'd been traveling with a man named Silas. They pick up their journey in Acts 15:40 when Paul splits with Barnabas and a man named Mark. Now, Silas was a faithful follower of God who traveled to disciple others, and he helped lead in the church. He's one whose name we see all throughout the pages of the New Testament, and he's one who's rubbed shoulders with Timothy often. In fact, if you look at the journey of Paul and Silas, Paul was great at coming into cities and spreading the word of God. He was great at building up churches and building up people, and then he would leave, and we would often see Silas afterward building up the church after Paul had left. Paul helped plant some seeds of faith, and Silas helped water them. During Timothy's initial journeys with Paul, he also traveled with Silas, and eventually the two of them would travel, just the two of them, without Paul. Now, what's interesting is if you've heard this story before, if you've been in church for a while, you often hear about Paul and Timothy. You rarely hear about this man named Silas. You know, I wonder the effect that a man like Silas had on Timothy, a man who seemed to boldly love the Lord, but was also wired a little differently than Paul. a man who probably wasn't considered an expert in the same way that Paul was. In the same chapter we meet Timothy, we also meet a woman named Lydia. Paul and Timothy and Silas have gone on to Philippi, and they meet a woman named Lydia, a dealer of purple cloth. We get to see Lydia come to know more and more about God, and about this same time, Paul and Silas are thrown into prison for their beliefs. They spend time singing hymns and telling everyone they meet about Jesus until eventually the prison guard and his entire family come to know the Lord because of Paul and Silas, and they release them from prison. When they leave prison, Paul and Silas go to Lydia's house, where it says they met with brothers and sisters. In other words, they met with a group of believers who spent time in Lydia's home. Something about Lydia's home was a place where people would congregate to learn, to talk, and to meet. I wonder what Timothy learned from a woman like Lydia, a woman who was a person who sold things on the street, a person who worked their 9-to-5 job, who was probably very different from the Apostle Paul, but a woman who seemed welcoming and hospitable, a woman who would not necessarily be deemed an expert in her faith. In Acts 18, we find Paul in the city of Corinth, where he meets a couple named Priscilla and Aquila. This is a married couple who were tent makers by trade, a trade which Paul also plied. It says that Paul stayed and worked with them, and eventually, when he was joined by Timothy and Silas, they also got to know Priscilla and Aquila. Later, Paul would leave for another missionary journey, and Priscilla and Aquila would join him for the first part. Eventually, a few years later, in the book of 2 Timothy 4:19, Paul is writing to Timothy, who is now a pastor, and he says this, 2 Timothy 4:19, "Greet Priscilla and Aquila in the household of Onesiphorus." He asks Timothy to greet Aquila and Priscilla, who are presumed members of Timothy's church. This couple were not necessarily experts in the faith. They were tent makers who heard a call from God and they followed. They weren't people like Paul who traveled from place to place, preaching in town squares. No, they found somewhere and they settled down. Still, they are listed by name multiple times in Scripture for the good work they did for the gospel. I have to wonder the impact they had on a young man named Timothy, who stayed with them, who traveled with them, and who eventually ended up doing life with them in the church in Ephesus. This is just a small smattering of people who rubbed shoulders with Timothy and who probably had a profound influence on the young man. A non-exhaustive list of others would include John Mark, Luke, Tychicus, Onesimus, Philemon, and many others. Timothy had influences from everything from a Pharisee among Pharisees and a Jew among Jews and the man named Paul, all the way down to a slave converted to Christianity and a man named Onesimus. He had influences who were salespeople, craftsmen, missionaries, and many others. Timothy's faith journey was marked by being influenced by people from all different walks of life whose only connection was that they loved Jesus and they followed him. And all this brings us back to our series, Hero of a Thousand Faces. This week, we want to dig in on parts 3 and 4 of the hero's journey concept, namely that those who disciple team with others and they learn new things. See, I think that Timothy's journey of faith had a lot to do with the Apostle Paul. I believe Paul taught him a ton. I also believe, however, that Paul had an amazing crew of people surrounding him, all of whom taught Timothy just as much, if not more. Discipleship is a team sport, and we all benefit when we all get involved. The work of Paul can't be discounted in Timothy's life, but neither can the work of Lydia, Aquila, Priscilla, and Silas, most of whom were blue-collar workers who loved God and still jumped in to disciple others. Which brings into play the Great Commission, which we talked about earlier. I believe everyone in this room, everyone in this church, should be being discipled by somebody intentionally, and at the same time, should be discipling others intentionally. As I look at how Jesus did things, and as I look at how his followers did things, that was the model. Last week talked about the rabbinical model, this idea of finding someone to just follow and learn from them. And it's obvious that Jesus was doing that with his disciples. And it's obvious that Paul was doing that with his disciples. Now, an important distinction for us, and the reason that we tell the story of Timothy, is because the idea of a rabbi, the idea of being an expert, the idea of having people following us, can be a little terrifying. Because the idea of mentoring someone else, of coaching someone else, of helping someone grow in their faith can be intimidating. We all know the worst of ourselves. We all know our questions, our doubts, our insecurities, and our gaps of knowledge. We all know where we're lacking, and it can often feel like the people around us just have it more together than we do. I think that's why when Matthew was writing the Great Commission, he made sure to include that line near the beginning. Matthew 28:17. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. Matthew wanted to make sure we knew that these 11 disciples who had followed Jesus for 3 years, they had started as 12. He wanted to know that these disciples, they had seen it all. They'd seen Jesus walk on water. They'd seen him calm storms. They'd seen him raise from the dead. They had put their fingers in the wounds on his wrists and side. They had seen him perform miracles, and yet some doubted. Yet when Jesus called them to disciple others, he didn't say, hey, all of you disciples who know what you think, know what you believe and have it together, you go disciple and all the rest of you sit here until you figure it out. No, he said, all of you go. So in this conversation about discipleship, if you don't feel like you have it 100% figured out, congratulations. You're in the same company as a group of disciples who followed Jesus for 3 years. In fact, I would say from almost everyone I've ever known who's ever done any kind of mentoring or discipleship or coaching, they often express not just how much they teach others, but how much they learn. Part of the cool thing about discovery is we really value this concept called reciprocity. In other words, I may have something to bring to you, but I know you have something to bring to me. When we mentor, when we disciple, when we meet with others, it isn't just to sit as an expert. It's not just to sit with the answers. No, it's to share what God has been showing us and in turn to learn what God has been showing others. Which brings us to an important premise I want you to remember as we continue to talk about discipleship in community. This is something that isn't going away here at Discovery. We believe strongly in it. However, we're not asking anyone in this room to be an expert, to become a trail guide. To be one of those people who runs up a mountain and has to carry their dog because the dog can't keep up. No, really, we're asking people at Discovery to be caravanners, to be people climbing the mountain, to help people make it to the summit as you learn how the trail works. And maybe you make it to the summit, maybe you figure most of it out, and maybe you don't, and that's okay. Because no matter how far along you are, there are people behind you on the trail who you can help coach and mentor and disciple to get up to where you are. And as they pass you, or as others come alongside, it isn't your job to see them make it to the summit, it's just your job to help them walk the trail. Here at Discovery, we're not looking for trail guides. We're looking for caravanners, because discipleship is a team sport. Especially because, let's be honest, we wish the process of discipleship was easy. We wish it always looked something like the cool drawing that we have for the series. This A, then B, then C, then D. It would be great if this is what a person's spiritual journey looked like. If we knew we could just check a box, we could finish one thing, move on to the other. But anyone who's ever walked the path of discipleship, anyone who's ever tried to grow in their faith, know it often looks a lot more like this other one. Sometimes it's linear. Sometimes it's all over the place. Sometimes you're meeting with people and you just seem like you have it figured out. But someone else is stuck on something that just seems so elementary. And then you get to the next thing and you are just stuck. You have no idea what they're talking about and you don't know how to move forward. There are some concepts that we get stuck on for years and others that we breeze past. There are some things that we learn and learn and relearn and relearn over and over again and can never seem to get past. Because discipleship is messy. And people move at different paces, and there are places we get stuck, or places we breeze right through that are different for everyone, and that's so wonderful. Because we'd rather have people who are on the caravan doing this together, asking questions and learning from one another, rather than just people who show their expertise and know their one way to do it. We're all in this together, especially in the mess. All right, so let's get into the nitty-gritty. Practically, how does this work? Jesus seemed to have a clear direction with the Great Commission, but what do the actual nuts and bolts of discipleship and community look like here at Discovery? I'm going to give you three big takeaways to take away. First, I want you to remember the numbers 1, 3, and 12, and where this is going to certainly get confusing is these are not actually numbers, but rather just concepts. The first is 1. Who is one person who is intentionally discipling and pouring into you? Who is intentionally mentoring you? Who are you intentionally walking with in faith to learn from? Notice the recurring word there, intentionally. For many of us, I think it's easy to point to people who have walked with us before or that we've learned from or that we learn with when we meet them. But this idea of doing it intentionally and with purpose isn't something most of us do. So the first question, the first takeaway, the first thing for you to walk away with is this. Who is intentionally discipling you, or who are you asking to mentor you, to disciple you, to walk with you? The second number I gave you is 3. We pull this idea from this idea that Jesus had a group of disciples, but he seemed to have 3 that he did life with pretty closely, Peter, James, and John. The question for this number is, who are you intentionally pouring into and discipling? Who are you intentionally meeting with? Who are you intentionally doing life with? Who are you intentionally shepherding and caring for spiritual growth? Now, the reason this is a concept and not a direct number is this doesn't have to be 3. This can be 1. This can be many. But I want everyone to be able to say, I know who I'm intentionally pouring into. Whether this is 1, 2, 5, who are you intentionally pouring into and discipling? The final number is 12, and again, a concept rather than a hard and fast number. The number 12 indicates the people you do life with. These may not be the people you are discipling or being discipled by, but they're the people you're rubbing shoulders with. These are the people you're in proximity with. This is your community. Do you have your people? Do you have people you lean on or can lean on you? Do you have people who make sure that you are known and that you know? Do you have people who show up? Do you have people you do life with? Who are your 1, your 3, and your 12? Now, for some of you, you hear these things, it's a non-issue. You already have in mind the person you're going to reach out to talk about mentoring and discipleship. You already have a name or two of people you might reach out to, you can coach or mentor. You already know your community, 0 issue. However, for the other 95% of the room, those numbers may sound great, but how do I do it? Well, you're in luck because we have some plans for the fall. Next week here at Discovery, and in fact through the whole semester, we have some handouts we'll be giving out after church, and they'll be sitting in the lobby for the rest of the semester if you miss next Sunday. One of them are all the ways to plug into community here at Discovery. If you're looking for your 12, if you're looking for your people, if you're looking for people to do life with, to rub shoulders with, this is for you. The idea here is that if you are 50s plus, man, woman, single, looking for a life group, looking for a mom's group, if you're looking for a way to do community, if you're looking for a place to belong, we have a place for you. And if we're missing something, if there's not a place for you, come and find me. Because we want you to find your people. We want this to be a place where you are known, where you know others, where you are loved, and where you love others. We'll also have a second handout for those who want to go deeper. For those who are looking to grow in their faith, for those who want to take this adventurous leap into discipleship, do you want to grow in your faith by learning? Do you want to grow in your faith by discipling others or by being discipled or by learning about discipleship? Are you new to your faith and just looking for answers? Are you a new believer? Are you a skeptic that just has more questions than answers and you just want to sit down and talk with someone? Are you not sure what you believe and you're trying to figure out if this Jesus thing is for you? Are you interested in concepts like justice and what do we do about it and how do we put actions behind our faith? If any of those things apply to you, we have a place for you this semester. We want to give you a ton of options that you can dive into community and find your 12. We want to give you a ton of options of ways you can go deeper and find your 1 or your 3. And we want to give you a ton of ways for you to grow in your faith, no matter where you are as you walk the trail. And finally, coupled with that, next week, we heard on the announcements, we're throwing a barbecue after second service. The Nest is hosting our barbecue. We'll have face painting, crafts, activities, and food, partially because I believe strongly that one of the things that brings people together is food, being able to sit and chat. If you ever wonder why we sometimes just throw parties after church, it's just an opportunity to connect. If you want to build your community, if you want to find people to connect to, if you want to find people to rub shoulders with, next week is for you. Stay, get some food, and connect with others. It might be an opportunity to find someone who can be your 1 or your 3. Just a way to connect. As we draw to a close, I want to invite the band back up. And I want to throw back up that idea of the hero's journey, this idea of discipleship. We're going to be in this series for a few more weeks as we continue to dive into this idea of discipleship, community, and walking with others in faith. Something like this gets me so excited and so nervous because I just want to be a church where everyone has somebody walking with them as they try to climb the mountain. I just want to be a church where everyone is known. I just want to be a church where when you walk in, you can just breathe because you know that you belong. Even though the path may not always be clear, and sometimes it's a lot more convoluted than this cool little picture we have up here, I just want to know that we don't have to walk it alone. I'm going to spend the next month praying for what God is doing here at Discovery when it comes to discipleship and community, and I would love to ask for you to be praying for that as well. In fact, would you join me in prayer? Hey, God, it's Jake. It's interesting looking at the life of Timothy, because I think when I look at my life, I can look at experts. I can look at people who knew what they were talking about, who had a lot of answers. But then I can just look at a lot of people who probably wouldn't be considered experts, but man, the profound impact they had on me. I'm so thankful. God, I thank you for a room right now that is filled with experts and non-experts, all of us doing it together. God, I thank you for the people who have just a wealth of knowledge, but know they have so much further to go. And God, I thank you for the people who are still just figuring it out, but are excited to take the journey with others. God, thanks for being a place where hopefully everyone here can be known and know others. We can walk this together. God, thank you here. Amen.